Randall Cunningham has joined us on Sports Byline USA, the former NFL quarterback. You know, you were a guy, and I mentioned this in the stats, the NFL career leader in yards rushing by a quarterback. And the one thing I used to hear, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but you can, you know, challenge it if you want, is that the Eagles were not particularly comfortable with you scrambling because the offensive linemen weren't quite sure where you were. Is that a true statement?
No, that's not a true statement because our game plan was very, very simplistic. We really relied on our defense. And Buddy Ryan said, Randall, I don't want to try to make you into anything that you're not. You're a great passer. You can run the ball. He said, go out and make five big plays, and we're going to win the game because our defense is going to do the job. And that worked for us all those years that he was there.
You mentioned about Buddy Ryan, very interesting personality. He was outspoken, more defense-oriented than offensive-oriented. Put the right spin on Buddy Ryan for me.
You know, a coach who loved his players and would go to bat, he would boycott if he needed to because he loved his players so much. And because his players, and we knew that, we would go to bat for him. So we had great unity on our team, unity like I've never experienced before. He was a man who cared so deeply about doing it his way that he would make you a part of his vision and pull out the best in you.
Also, when you think about the fact that you are a Christian athlete, that can always be somewhat controversial because over the years, I know that in baseball they've had the God squads and people talk about how they will say, well, it was God's will to do that and to do this. But it's a very thin line, is it not, being someone who is outspoken about their religion and also not somebody who proselytizes too much? Tell me a little bit about how hard that is for you, was for you, and also for any Christian athlete.
Well, one of the things that Reggie White taught me was that the Bible says, if you deny me, God says, if you deny me before man, I will deny you before my Father in heaven. So believers don't have a choice but to put Christ on our sleeves at times. And if you know I'm going to call on God in my quiet time, I better call on him when I'm on the football field too, especially when you're dropping back and there's 350-pound defensive linemen coming who are trying to put you out of the game. So I think that when you look at what's happened over the years, and I believe a lot of it did start with Reggie White, there are a lot of people who are standing up and being bold, and, you know, there is a place for it in the NFL and in all sports as well.
I was looking at an interview with Mike Tyson, and he talked very emotionally, and it was really very difficult for him to talk about the loss of his young child, and that is a reflection to a great degree of what Randall Cunningham had to go through. You had to overcome tragedy as well as you lost a child, and it really forced you to lay it down, as the book title says. Take me through that tragedy, when it happened, how it happened, and how you dealt with it.
Well, it was a difficult thing. You know, I came home and saw a bunch of cars outside of my house. I knew that something had happened to my child. I went in there. It was a very, very difficult time of tribulation. I experienced that time in that poem, the poem about footprints, where, you know, you see two sets of footprints walking, but then all of a sudden you only see one set. I really believe that we as a family experienced that because we really believe that God was carrying us in the midst, and those weren't our footprints, but that one set of footprints was God's footprints. And, you know, we lost little Christian at 2.5 years old, and I do discuss that in the book, Lay It Down. And this book that I've written is a book to heal people. It's a book that lets people know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and the future doesn't have to always look dim, and that we can have hope and we can know that there's a better tomorrow. When we look at what just happened in Boston with the bombings, you know, these people need to be uplifted. They need to be encouraged. That's a very, very difficult tribulation that America has gone through, and we need to learn how to rally around them. Let the government and our president find out who has done this. But this book would be a great book even for people in Boston who are going through that, because it will let them know that we hit a bump in the road and it hurts very bad, but we have to keep on going. We can't stop. We've got to live on for those who have passed away. We've got to keep believing for those who are injured, and we've got to raise ourselves up as a country that sticks together and that fights through tough times like this. And my book really helps people to get stronger and more vibrant.
Along with your strong religious beliefs, did you find that because you were a highly skilled professional athlete that takes dedication and strong focus, that that helped you deal with this crisis as well, Randall?
Yes, I do. I believe that hard work, dedication, facing trials in the past, it doesn't make you numb, but what it does is it makes you become a little more thick-skinned, and it helps you to say, you know, God, I got to rely on you. I can't rely on myself because I'll let myself down. And I think that's the mistake that we as humans make, is that we think we have all the answers, and we reach and we grab whatever feels comfortable to us. But when you're going through a trial right now in Boston, and your question is why, I faced that with my son. And I didn't want to ask God, why did my son have to die? So instead, I just said, thank you, God, for the 2.5 years that you gave us to be with that little boy. And you've taken him back. And in the midst of it, I still love you today more than I did yesterday. And I'm not going to turn my back on you because you're a sovereign God and you have a bright future for us because you say that we could have eternal life and I can meet back up with my son at the end of our lives. So I keep the right perspective on things.
After you left Philadelphia, I think you had some serious questions as to whether you wanted to play football again, and then the phone started ringing, and you ended up with the Minnesota Vikings for 3 years. And let me take you to that 1998 season, because I thought it was a magical season, and Brian Billick, who's a good friend of mine, was the offensive coordinator that season, and the Vikings went on to score an NFL record at that time, now broken by the Patriots, of 556 points, only lost one regular season game. You were the player of the year in the National Football League. What was so special? Why did everything click for you and for the Minnesota Vikings that season?
Well, there was divine timing. I had experienced being on a wonderful team in the Philadelphia Eagles, and the puzzle hadn't been put together in Philadelphia. And then I go to Minnesota after taking the year off, never, ever planned on playing again. And I believe that it was godsend. And I went there and met Brian Billick, and they had assembled a wonderful offensive line, a great team, great offense, great special teams, great coaching staff. And in the midst of all of that, I get catapulted into the lineup, you know, as a backup quarterback and then the starter because of an injury to Brad Johnson. And the next thing you know, we're just doing these things that people are going, this team's going to win the Super Bowl. They're going to be playing against Denver, and they're going to win the Super Bowl. And without Brian Billick as a coach, let me tell you something. We would not have done anything with that offense because he's a genius. I can't believe that there's not an owner that doesn't have him in the NFL taking a team to the Super Bowl. He could grab a team, and within 3 years, he could have a team in the Super Bowl. All you got to do is have it assembled, let him do things his way, and he will make it happen because he's a genius. He knows how to treat his players. He instills confidence in people. And I tell you what, that's what happened with he and Denny Green. Denny Green is a head coach. He allowed all the coaches to do what they needed to do, and we just had an excellent year. It was a divine year.
I'm going to share a story with you because after he got fired from Baltimore, I called him immediately, and I said to him, hey, you've got some time on your hands. Would you like to go to Iraq with me as we broadcast the show from over there? And he said, sure. So I had not had a chance, Randall, to see him since he got fired. And we all meet up in Washington, D.C. to fly to Kuwait to fly on to Iraq then. And I am the last person on the airplane. They hold the plane for me. It's 10 o'clock at night in Washington. I get on, sit down beside Brian, and as we're flying out and having dinner, I turn to Brian. I said, okay, Brian, you win a Super Bowl. You go 13-3 the year before. You got an injury to your quarterback this season, and they fire you? And I said, how do you explain that? And you'll love this, Randall. He turned to me, he smiled, and he said, Ron, all you need to know is 3 years, $18
million. Wow, that's beautiful. I like that one.
You know, he came from the Bill Walsh tree of coaches along with Denny Green, and I can see a lot in his play calling and his development and how he interacts with players. But let me ask you about one player you had on Minnesota, and that was Randy Moss. And I'm just wondering, was he as frustrating to the players or to you as much as he might have been with the outsiders like the fans and to the media?
You know what? I love Randy Moss and will always love him. As soon as he came into the team, I didn't know who this kid was or anything. When I saw his ability, I said, wow. I said, there's nobody who has the ability that he has to do some of the things that he does. And I began to develop a different type of relationship with him. I wanted him to be able to trust me as a minister. And so I sowed into his life, and he knew that he could come to me, and he could open up, and he could say whatever he wanted to say, however he was feeling, whatever he was going through. And that's the kind of a relationship I had with Randy. It was a very open relationship. He's a good kid. And now I'm sure he's doing the same thing for those kids in San Francisco. Randy is just a great kid, and I think that he was maybe going through some things earlier in his career, and he had a couple of little things happen off the field, but then he brought it back together.
Before I kick you loose, I've got to talk about something you talk a great deal about in this book, and I know mentoring kids is very important to you, and I understand that, but you talk about America suffering from the ailment of fatherlessness. Tell me what is the essence of the importance of that.
Well, you know, even as a pastor right now, I'm talking about unity in the household and how a house divided against itself cannot stand. So when I talk about homelessness, I'm not homelessness, but fatherlessness in the book, I'm really talking about trying to help these single mothers who are out there, and they've got these boys who don't have a positive male image in their life. And what we do at my church, Remnant Ministries in Las Vegas, Nevada, is we build men, strong men, who will take these kids on, these boys and girls on, as father figures, understanding that we can never be their earthly fathers, but we can be their mentors. And what we do is we build them up, telling them how to treat women, how to treat kids in school. You can't bully them. We teach them how to stand tall as leaders on their sports teams and how to be the leaders scholastically in the classroom and out of the classroom. And we also are teaching them that we do care for them, and that if they're in a bind and they need someone to talk to, that they can call us, and that we will be there for them. And so what happens is we have a very strong male base of leaders in our church at Remnant Ministries, and we're building that in Las Vegas, where our kids will grow up strong. They'll grow up as great leaders. They won't go through divorces. They won't repeat history if their parents have been through divorces, where their kids have to grow up without their fathers in the house. And we're growing them up where they won't be kids going to jail and going to prison and not being able to see their children and forcing women to raise up kids when they can't. A woman can't play the role of a father. She could sit there and she could be a mother, but only a father can be a father, and only a mother can be a mother. There's a special bond that a woman has with a child, and there's a special bond that a father needs to have with his children. That leadership and that strength needs to be in the house. And so I talk about that in the book, and I really believe that this will help a lot of single mothers to understand that there are men out there who do care about their kids.
You write in the book, the building blocks of our culture begin with strong families, and the father is vital to that equation. Children need a father who is there. They need to be taught by their fathers, encouraged by their fathers, loved by their fathers. It seems to be a vicious cycle when fathers abdicate their responsibilities. Do we have to break that vicious cycle in order to move to a more positive stance on that, Randall?
Yeah, you know, we've been calling different generations Generation X and Generation That. But you know what we need to do? We need to work right now. We need to build one another. We need to be more positive in life. We need to be encouraging. We need to be edifying. And it all starts from the top down, from our president, through our government officials, through our police forces, and then down onto the high schools and colleges. And we need to understand that if we are going to have strong families here in America, we're going to have to learn how to let bygones be bygones, forgive people, stop walking around like with bitter faces, look like we've been chewing lemons all the time, and taste the sweetness and the goodness that God has blessed us with, which is we have life, and we have life more abundantly. And we got to put smiles on our face and realize that things are never as bad as we think they are. And then we could be great fathers and mothers.
In about 15 seconds, what do you want people to take away from this book?
I just want them to know that there's somebody out there who cares about everyone and wants to see their betterment happen. And I pray that they would support the book. It's not really an expensive book, but it's called Lay It Down. It's online, Amazon.com, Borders Online, and it's something that will help everybody.
Randall, I want to thank you. I've always enjoyed our conversations, insightful and also stimulating. Take care, my friend. You're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you so much.
16 years in the National Football League, 11 of those, of course, with the Eagles. Randall Cunningham with us, and boy, could this guy run. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.